Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to New Books in Psychoanalysis, a podcast on the New Books Network. I'm Cassandra Seltman, your host. Today, I'll be speaking with Sergio Benvenuto about his newest book, Conversations with Lacan. Sergio Benvenuto is a psychoanalyst and philosopher who lives in Rome. He is researcher at the National Council for Scientific Research in Rome, Italy, at the former Institute of Psychology. He is the president of Institute for Advanced Studies in Psychoanalysis. Since 1995 until 2020, he was the editor of the European Journal of Psychoanalysis and a member of the editorial board of American Imago and Psychoanalytic Discourse. He has worked on Freud and Lacan, Wittgenstein and Ethics, Plato's Philosophy of Eros, Theory of Fashion, Theory of Populism, and Monotheisms. His publications in many different languages include Perversion and Charity, An Ethical Approach, Perversion, Psychoanalytic Perspectives, In Freud's Tracts, Ethics, Wonders, and the Real in Wittgenstein, Ethics and Philosophy of Culture, Wittgensteinian Approaches, What Are Perversions, from London, Carnac, 2016, and most recently, Conversations with Lacan, Rutledge, 2020. So Sergio Benvenuto, very glad to have you here.
Thank you for your invitation. Thank you.
So the question we always start with on this podcast is, what motivated you to write this book?
Because, you know, it's more than 50 years that I deal with Lacan. I started when I was a young man, 20 years old, and I attended Lacan seminars when I was a student in Paris. Lacanism was one of my early love, no? And with the time, of course, at a distance, no? You appreciate your previous lovers, but you build another life. But anyway, for 50 years, I'm 72. I thought that the time came in order to transmit to others, especially younger people, which was my experience with Lacan, you know, sort of a love affair, intellectual love affair of course. I needed to transmit which was my experience with the Lacanism. And which is not an experience of a member of a Lacanian school. I was for a while also a member of some Lacanian schools, but I gave up. It was this feeling of a transmission to new generations of psychoanalysts, of philosophers, the intellectuals, which was your personal link with his band. I attended his seminars for years. I met him. I never had an analysis with him, but I had analysis with some Lacanian analyst. You know, it's part of my life, of youth life, even if later. I don't consider me anymore a Lacanian, but I think that it's a part of my history, and I would like that Lacan would be part of the history of also other colleagues and other.
You said you don't consider yourself a Lacanian. What makes you not a Lacanian?
Also in America, there are many Lacanian schools. I think that they transmit they do a very good job in the sense that you know they train about Lacan with especially the difficult author to be read. He's not the only one. Other famous analysts are completely almost unreadable, like Bion, for example, in philosophy, a lot. I think that like the schools, in a certain way, make a good social service in order to train younger people to be acquainted to this strange thought. But I think that at a certain point, it's my preference. You have to leave the school. At a certain point, we cannot be an eternal student. I don't know if you have in American this expression, an eternal student. It's
we do.
Person who study, but they never start real life. No. And I don't think that to be a Lacanian eternal student is a good issue. And I think that at a certain point you have to jump to the after school. No? After school, in my Italian experience, it was that you did attend lessons, but you went to play chess, poker, instead of staying in the classroom. And I think that many Lacanians need this after school, because why? Because I repeat, Lacanian schools are very important because they initiate people who cannot understand anything about Lacan to some minimal concept. But the what I don't like in many Lacanian schools, not in all, it's the fact that they give as implicit the fact that Lacan gives the answers. Now, if you have a scholastic problem, you know, if you read well Lacan, it will give you the answers. It's a completely different approach from mine, because I think that Lacan teaching, it is what you have to explain. It's not the explanans in Latin, but the explanandum. You have to explain Lacan, and it's why I think that his charm, even now, I mean, for me, it's not the fact that he answered to the huge psychoanalytic questions, but because he was able to find the right questions about psychoanalysis. And it's why psychoanalytic school generally tended to be a psychoanalysis of answers. No, if you read the Bible, the Freudian Lacanian Bible, you will find the answer. No, even the Bible, it's a lot of unsolved questions. It's why my position is not Lacanian. Even if I have a lot of friends who are schoolish Lacanians, and I have very good relationship with them. There is there some difference. I would add that you know one of the reasons I wrote this book, I said that it was a way to witness my long experience with Lacanism, but also secretly I wished to tell people that Lacan is can be dangerous. I would say addictive. I know a lot of persons in Italy, in France, even in America, were addict of Lacan. It would be interesting to understand why. I witnessed a lot of addiction when I was intellectual addiction. When I was younger, to Marxism, to Maoism, to liberalism, to a lot of ideology. And why Lacan is so addictive? Personally, I think that, I tell you frankly, that Picasso, I think that Lacan is a sort of a Picasso of psychoanalysis. No, if we compare to psychoanalysis, he was a Picasso. No, and the point is, many psychoanalysts, also in mainstream schools, they ignore Picasso. I mean Lacan, and they are backward because they don't want to understand that Lacan, Picasso were the new. Also, by book was a way to show people who hate Lacan. You know, I know a lot of people who say that Lacan is just bullshit, incomprehensible, anti-scientific. I tried to show the Lacan system had a certain sense, no? But at the same time, imagine a Picassian school today in contemporary art. You know, the point is that, of course, it's essential to cope with Picasso, but you cannot paint again the Demoiselle d'Avignon. You have to overcome. No, contemporary art is completely far from Picasso, but there wouldn't have been modern contemporary art without Picasso. You know, and it's why my position is to tell anti-Lacanians, you are wrong because you have lost the train of modernity. Lacan was able, to grasp the train of modernity in art, philosophy, cultural studies, no? And it's now, I think, the most fashionable psychoanalyst in the Western world. But the danger of schools, it's to create a lot sort of dogmas, the idea that Lacan was able to give the final answer. Now, Lacan proposed us the right questions about the essential contradiction of psychoanalysis. It's my fault.
Right, and this question of danger makes me think of the question of ethics that seems to come up in almost all of your books. You write that psychoanalysis is an ethical project concerned with the direction of subjectivity, and that the analyst has an ethical position, and that analytic technique is really a matter of ethical choice. So can you tell us why you choose this word and what is the fundamental ethical choice that's made by the analyst, which makes them a psychoanalyst and not a hairdresser or any other profession?
It's not something original. You know, I took it from Lacan. The point, I mean, I suppose that even in America, the vast debate is always, I mean, the obsessive debate if psychoanalysis is scientific, it's like a medicine, evidence-based. Psychoanalysis depends from a science, like a medicine, normal medicine, that depends from physiology, the idea is psychoanalysis the practical application of science. Mm? But I think it's a completely wrong question, because the problem of efficacy of psychoanalysis, and I think that it's a real important problem, how much at which limit psychoanalysis is efficient, is in order to cure, forgets an essential dimension which Freud instead grasped when he told that psychoanalysis is an impossible profession, like being politician and being educator. No, in certain way, it's unavoidable to a politician. It's unavoidable to have an educator, because if we have children or we have students, we have to educate. It's impossible of not educating. It's impossible of not governing. And in a certain sense, we are entering in an epoch where it's impossible not psychoanalyzing. Statistics say that, clients of psychoanalysis are diminishing, are going down. But, many other psychotherapists are just, I think, pop applications of psychoanalysis, no? And in a certain way, psychoanalysis is now the a third kind of a practice. And nobody thinks that, for example, Biden in the last election beat Trump because he were more scientific than Trump. Or did Trump won Hillary Clinton 4 years ago because it was more scientific? Of course, you can be, as a politician, you can know a lot of things, of scientific things, sociology, economy, psychology, psychoanalysis, but essentially you are a politician, and it means that you have to deal with the unconscious. When Freud said the three impossible professions, which means that in certain sense they are not professions, it's to be a politician, to be an educator, to be an analyst. Why? Because, in fact, they all have to deal with the conscious. Lacans are very naive because they think that they can cure or educate children applying a very rigid scheme, as a Lacan system was a system of answers, but it's not true. The work of an analyst, I'm working as analyst since many, many years, it's completely an impure, it's a dirty job. Dirty job because you cannot do pure psychoanalysis, no? associates, it's a sort of an ideal which you see in films, not that the pure ideal patient, but in fact, your patient don't want at all to be analyzed, and you have to invent for each patient a special psychotherapy. I would say that you have to invent a special psychotherapy or psychoanalysis for each patient, because the demand and the problematic is always different. You know, I don't know if I was clear in the definition of this essential. The real problem it's not the scientificity of psychoanalysis, but the effectiveness of psychoanalysis inside a frame of a concept, because when a political man is effective, no, he's effective for whom and for which epoch? A politician can be effective in the next 3 years. It says that people earn a lot of money. But what will happen in several 8 years, you know? And it's also the dramatic question of analysts. No? Often analysts think that they are great analysts because the patient, the analyst, live happy and they're very grateful. But what will happen in 2, 3, or 4 years? You know, the dramatic problem that a serious politician, not a demagogue, raises because he's obsessed by this, it's the same, or an educator, it's the same problem of psychoanalysis, which is that psychoanalysis is scientific. In a certain sense, it spreads a knowledge, no? But this knowledge, it's not the knowledge of sociology, economy, psychology, cognitive sciences. Of course, as an analyst, you have to know all the sciences. But your practice is not the practice of the scientist. It's the practice of the politician. You have to win the unconscious. It's not... truth is only one way to win. Psychoanalysis is not to tell the truth. I mean, it's my experience. Eh? Others can have other experiences.
I like this idea of winning the unconscious.
Yes, but win the unconscious, but you know, it's ambiguous because in a certain way. You have to collaborate with the unconscious, you know. I don't know if you read this book by Kutze, Waiting for the Barbarians, or even the recent movie, no? That, you know, you think that all persons around the empire are threatening barbarians, and you start to persecute and to massacre them, no? The point is not to massacre the unconscious, but to understand that maybe the barbarians, no, the outside, can be very useful and enrich your subjectivity. No? This dream of being savage, of the, you know, in a certain way. There was a lot of discussion since 6 years about the famous Freudian sentence, "Wo es war, soll ich werden," which was wrongly translated in English standard edition, where the id was the ego has to overcome or something like this. So, many philosophers, most important philosophers, not only Lacan, but Derrida, Foucault, tried to interpret the sentence as the core of the Freudian teaching. And the interpretation is not that the ego of the second Freudian topics has to dry up the S, no? And the ego, the control, the imperialism of the ego, the ego empire, no? conquers the sea, the ocean of the S, of the id. It's what still believes ego psychology, which is not any more important in it's dying, but it's still influential. The idea proposed by Lacan, by Facchinelli, by others, it was that in certain way the S, the unconscious, has to find a way of dwelling the S. It means that it's a sort of a colonization of the S. The ego has to be in strict, not dry up the S. No, the ego, the control, rationality, consciousness have to put aside what it's instinctual drive, and I met some patient who were cured in Italy by this method, and the result was sincerely catastrophic. The real point is that to have you have to give space to the why, because according to Freud, unconscious is not the repressed, what you have to throw away, but it's also the source of any creativity. It's what Winnicott pushed in a certain way. No, that in a certain way. The real aim of a cure is not to compress the unconscious, the S, but means to exploit the S and to create creative human beings, men and women. And I think that the idea that in certain way psychoanalysis, the good psychoanalysis, pushes towards a creative side, because the unconscious is very creative. This essential book by Freud, The Joke and Its Relationship with Unconscious, which nobody cared before Lacan. Lacan was the first to tell, but it's a fundamental. It was considered before Lacan as a joke, as an amusement by Freud, something minor. He said, no, it's one of the essential book of psychoanalysis, because unconscious is not just the repressed, but it's the source of creativity for human being, and the sense of humor, it's the real solution. Even in my experience, I realize that analysons have to depart when they are able to make jokes.
And this idea of working with the difficult unconscious in terms of acting is a big technique for Lacan. You write about cutting the session as the analyst acting in, and in general, that Lacanian analysts interpret by acting. So it made me wonder if Freud invented the talking cure and Joyce utilized a writing cure, did Lacan invent an acting cure? And if so, I wonder what the limits are of action in a Lacanian analysis, if we should take Lacan as our example.
But no, when I don't practice the cutting of session, I mean, I'm not a rigid. You know, at a certain point, I realized that the session is over, and to continue for 15 minutes, maybe it's a waste of time. I mean, the point was, but generally, Lacan think that the best sessions are short sessions. The real point, the point is not that you have to cut sessions, no, because it can be a good technique, no. Instead of interpret by words, you interpret by acts. But it's not my practice, you know. Also because it's mind here is better, but simply because I think that each analyst has to find its own style, no? And of course, I found my style with it. The idea of rather interpreting to cut sessions, it's in a certain way the fact that Lacan didn't believe anymore in interpretation. In a certain say, we can see the whole history of psychoanalysis in the latest century as a sort of a dismantling of interpretation. Even Freud started when, instead of interpretation, proposed the construction, or reconstruction. No, you don't have to interpret symbolically, but you have to reconstruct in the puzzle. And even if officially psychoanalysis is based on interpretation, and because it's based on interpretation, is thrown out by the cognitive science, because if you make science, you need evidence, and any interpretation is never a matter of evidence. You know, even if you interpret that your child he's crying, you know, for bonbon, for caramel, you know, it's an interpretation. You don't have any evidence, you know. And but at the same time, even if the interpretation is the real capacity, the skill, to interpret, and it's very difficult because I have supervision with the many kinds of analysts of all schools, you know, and I have to say that unfortunately, very few analysts, very few colleagues have the sixth sense for interpretation. How to interpret really in a very moving way that the analyst cries or laughs, because you have made that interpretation. It's quite that very few analysts are able. I think that Lacan's idea, strangely, Lacan said that it was in the first epoch that it was essential, was in psychoanalysis, language and the speech, no, and interpretation. But paradoxically, his analysis were the least spoken. No, if somebody compares to Zen master, I was before Lacan fascinated by the Zen master in India, in Japan, you know, and by Oriental psychotherapist, and it's true that psychoanalysis is essentially an act, not any interpretation. At my age, I think that it's more. For example, there is a fashion now among IPA analysts that we have to deal with enactment. It means that, for example, an analyst who behaves always in the same way with the patient, accompanying him or her to the door with the same words, the same style, the same ritual. At certain point, says something new about what's your the state of your wife, you know, it's considered a terrible enactment, you know. But you know, I do always enactments, always, because. The idea that there's a sort of prejudice that, you know, in a certain sense, the analytic studio is a laboratory, and in the laboratory you have to standardize. Not for each patient, you have to appeal the same rules, same rituals, you know. Which is reassuring for the analyst, but in fact you have to find something completely different. Sometimes, for example, I have to insult some patients, and only insult them, you can have a switch. As Masoud Khan, it's an analyst. I'm not Winnicottian like Masoud Khan, but I think he was a great magician of the clinics. He was expelled by the British Association because he insulted some patient were Jews, and he was a Muslim prince, and he started to insult him. You are a dirty Jew, you know. And for this reason, he was expelled. But it's what clear that everything in this case is ironic. It's ironic, and I think that this scene, you know, there are certain, especially perverse patient, where to have a very very tough, and to tell them you are bullshit. You are telling me bullshit. I don't believe you. You are lying to me. Please, if you want to go away, it's the only way to establish a real transference. And in a certain sense, psychoanalysis is based on the acting out of transference. To try to formalize all this in sort of a package, you know, I don't like mainstream psychoanalysis because it was to compress psychoanalysis in a package, no, in a closed package. But psychoanalysis, you have to invent for each analysant's new techniques.
In your discussion of transference, since you mentioned transference, you say that a major difference in technique between what we can call the IPA analysts and the Lacanian analysts in terms of interpretation of the transference is that you write that the mainstream analysts link everything back to themselves, which creates a kind of delusion of reference. And then the Lacanian analyst does the opposite. So when there is a reference to the actual analyst, they interpret it as being about someone outside the room. And you say that both these techniques have their shortcomings, but you don't say what they are. So my question would be, you know, what do you see as the shortcoming of the Lacanian technique of interpreting the transference? And also, why so little on transference? There wasn't so much on transference in your book compared to the other fundamentals.
No, but you know, I wrote some pages about transfers. Yeah, sure, I didn't have time to expand. Yes, it's it was a description of the actual difference between mainstream psychoanalysis and Lacanian analysis. I practice something between both. I was trained also as a Kleinian in Italy. I think that what helped me it was to have an experience of training in completely different schools in order and I was able to understand the common grounds but also the differences. You know, for the mainstream IPA psychoanalysis, as already Strachey said, you know, that the real good interpretation are just in interpretation about the relation between an analyst and if an analysander talks about you know, friends, sisters, brothers, you know, it's not real. And if you interpret this relationship, it's nothing. I mean, it's fluid. But if you interpret reports, tales, you know, as your own relationship, the ik et donc, no, here and now, present. No, at certain point, there was a conviction, especially in Anglo-American psychoanalysis, that what matters is ik et nunc relationship with the analyst. It's just a matter, and it's why a lot of relationship theories, hermeneutic, based on empathy. You know, now everything is focused on the two persons' relationship as between two friends. You know, the analyst and the analysand. No, Lacan has a more classic idea that the analyst in a certain way, yeah, sure, he has to interpret the transferential, you know, desire, but according to what Plato made in the Symposium, I mean, what Socrates made in the Plato of Symposius, the model of Lacanian analysis, it's the contrary. The analysis says, I love you, you are my master, you are my, you know, and the analyst should say, no, I'm just a puppet. I'm not your master. Try to understand who was your real master. It's an opposition for Lacan, everything starts from transference, but you have overcome transference. According to what Freud said, who consider transference as a form of iatrogenic neurosis, the analysts have the responsibility to create another neurosis in their patient, and the transference was morbid for it means according to Freud, you have to cure twice a person, first from the phantasm and afterwards from the analysis. You know, the second neurosis, it was the continuing of analysis, according to Freud. Too much, if you continue too much analysis. It's why generally I try to have a short analysis, which don't last more than 4 years. Otherwise, you are what a famous Italian psychoanalyst, Elvio Facchinelli, called claustrophilia, not claustrophobia, but claustrophilia. There is a very powerful drive to enter in a kind of a capsule with the analyst. And I know a lot of these claustrophilias, which lasted for years and years and years. And it was very hard to keep out this person from this claustrophilia. Me too, sometimes I told also some colleagues were swamped in a claustrophilic analysis, which lasted for years and years. But, you know, come out from this swam of analysis, you know? And it was great. I mean, I started telling that Lacan is dangerous, and so I also I wrote this book, not only for witness my personal experience, but also psychoanalysis in general is dangerous, because I mean the perverse use of transference is a great temptation for many. When an analyst, for example, has the chance to have as an analyst a VIP. I mean, a person he likes, he admires, who can be, a philosopher, a writer, a scientist, a powerful fan. The instinct of the analyst is to stop analysis.
Well, you were maybe starting to get to this about the claustrophilia, the enclosure. I love your chapter, Lacan and the Psychoanalysis of Today, where you introduce us to the four discourses as Lacan's theory of social life. And if we return to Freud, we see that he believed all groups are essentially fascistic and every collective is vertical. He doesn't believe there's a horizontal mass. And then on the other side of this, Freud writes about passionate love, which undermines social aggregation. Yeah. So you write, we all swing between the fascism of the group we belong to and the infatuation for the individual we adore, which may even be ourselves. Ethic decency in our lives is entirely decided by the way we juggle between infatuation and fascism. So analysts, of course, belong to fascist groups as well, like the Institute. But I found myself wondering while I was reading this, if psychoanalysis has a wish to take the individual and seduce them away from the fascist mass into a kind of a passionate love with the analyst. Are we more on that side of the... of the coin?
Yes, I think that in a certain way, Freud was a romantic. No, he had this mask of a hyper-positivistic scientist, but in a certain way, it was very romantic, and his way he was often this term, which is untranslatable. I think also in English, "zensucht," no, "zensucht." Which can be translated as a poignant, something poignant, you know. The idea was essentially that passionate love is like Romeo and Juliet, which is a love in contrast with all the social system. Of course, we know also that passionate love, couple love, is part of the structure of society, because without love and couple and families, we don't have any more reproduction of the species. But I think that he grasped when we are in love, there is a real sentiment to cut with your society. I don't know if it's spread with everybody, you know, that in a certain sense the couple love is. It's true that of course the social system has some rights, important rights like honeymoon, no? Some anthropologists ask why honeymoon is called honeymoon, no? It's considered a period where the passion love, the pure sex, the animal sex, the natural sex can be completely expressed before you come back to the social duties of being a wife, mother, husband. No, it's every social system works if it gives place, a certain place, to what is antisocial. Each society has an antisocial, you know, like a carnival. In the past, we have a lot of the feast of 14 July in Paris, which for tradition it was the feast of the transgression of a revolution, even for girls who could have sex, because it was a revolution, you know. But this revolution is completely inside the social system. No, it's a part of what is called in English the balanced. The general equilibrium. But I think that every society has to solve the problem of antisociality. In a certain sense, the real bottom, the real truth of every social structure, even the most rigid, like in certain society, totalitarian society like communism, Stalinism, cultural revolution in China, you know, they know that in certain sense, the real matter is something in the human being which is transgressive. And I think that Freud grasps that unconscious is the social transgression. Even if everybody says not, but you know, the unconscious is the discourse of the others. Unconscious, we are convinced that it's the wish of our parents. Our parents decided that I had to answer dancer, and I will be a dancer. No, because unconsciously I was forced to be. But this wish of the parents, it's the real transgression. Because the unconscious is transgressive as a superego, which is cruel. It's this cruelty of the unconscious. Cruel, why? Because the unconscious forces you to enjoy. Absolutely, to a joy, no? And we don't know that in our normal life we can try to get satisfaction, but the super jouissant and all super ego always says that super enjoy, but I cannot. And I think that it was a very deep interpretation by Lacan, that the superego, it's not the barring of a joy. You don't have to enjoy, otherwise you are a sinner. No, your sin is the fact that you are unable to enjoy. But to enjoy without limits is impossible. I published a book of my autobiographic experience on May 68 in France. I was touring there, no, and the essential slogan was at that time in the streets, enjoy without any limits. No, it was this idea that freedom is enjoyment, but instead it's a superego imperative, no, that you have to enjoy. And we have some martyrs of enjoyment, in fact, in our cultural tradition. For example, Don Giovanni by Mozart, you know, victim, he's a martyr of the enjoyment, even when God statue tells us repent, I mean, he's very stubborn. He's not, I prefer enjoyment, even the enjoyment of the hell, rather than to give back, to give up enjoyment. You know, Lacan was very smart in order that he pushed us to think the real paradox and the dialectics without solution of enjoyment. And I think it was not a solution, but it was a way to spread the problem. And we have to find the solutions.
A cruel and addictive command.
Yes, but you know, it's what clear that a lot of patients and adolescents who come they say simply, I cannot enjoy. I would like to enjoy, but I cannot enjoy. The second step is always yes, you cannot enjoy because you don't want to enjoy. But who does want that to enjoy? And it becomes very complicated. But some find a certain balance, you know. But like in politics, the balance, the equilibrium, the peaceful coexistence is never a solution, you know. Someone else knows that you have to deal with the provisional solution. You have to give to any analyst what the word in English when you walk by with a stamp, no, with the, okay, I don't remember the name of these prostheses. You need the prostheses. And Lacan said, you analysts, you don't have to be maniac, and that you think that you can change the essential of human beings, but you can provide the good. The good canes for persons, rapiessage, no, like in the at that time it was in fashion to put on the knee, some nice patch of with a nice color. No, in order to hide the
wound or
the split of the split of this weather, and in certain way, he said analysis is to provide good patches. It didn't have a real analysis. He's the hand. He's the solution of a. He had a real sense of the limitation and of the humility of the analysis, which is not shared often by his disciples, who have a sort of a imperialistic, Lacan solved anything, but he didn't solve anything. It helped me to think about the central problem of psychoanalysis. It's what I wished to transfer to my book. If you read Lacan, you can get in touch with the real psychoanalytic problems. Other schools deal with the fake psychoanalytic problems. It's academic problems. Often I read psychology or ego psychology. Some are also smart and interesting, but it's academic problems. Lacan puts us in touch with the real ethical essential problem. What does mean being an analyst? Very few analysts. It's an imposture. Often Lacan says in his seminar, are you imposters? What distinguishes it's just a placebo effect, psychoanalysis, or something really happens? It's Lacan is a starting point for thinking psychoanalysis. It's not the end of psychoanalysis. It's why I don't agree with my friends Lacanians of the school.
Right. So I think we've hit the limit of time. Can you tell us briefly what you're working on now before we end?
I'm shifting towards politics. I'm writing a book on the centennial of the publication of Massen Psychologie und Hic Analyse by Freud, group analysis and group psychology and the analysis of the ego, which interprets that Freud thinks that there's an opposition, that in a certain way psychology is always a group psychology, always, even if when psychology deals with individuals, he thinks that in a certain way psychology is always collective, and psychoanalysis deals with the subject, ish, an I, an ego, with completely, with failing his belonging to any group. It's the book I'm publishing in Italian. I hope it will be translated or also in English. If you like, it's a instant book. For the centennial.
Well, when it does get translated, I look forward to having you back on the podcast to talk about the group.
Sure. It's my preferred topic. I enjoyed our conversation and also your question. And if we can have more opportunity to have a conversation, I would appreciate it.
Wonderful. Thank you for being here, and thanks to everyone for listening.